Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KVU program all about books and the people who write them. I'm your host this week, Ken Jones. On today's show, our guest is Judith Arcana, author of the new book of poems, Announcements from the Planetarium, published by Oregon's own Flowstone Press. Judith writes poems, stories, essays, and books. Her work includes a biography of Grace Paley, titled Grace Paley's Life Stories, the poetry collections What If Your Mother, Fourth Period English, The Parachute Jump Effect, and Hear from Somewhere Else, which won the 2015 Turtle Island Quarterly Editor's Choice Chapbook Award. Her story, soon to be a major motion picture, won the first Minerva Rising Prose Prize and was published as a chapbook. A longtime teacher of literature, writing, and women's studies, Judith also volunteered as a Jane, a member of the Chicago Underground Service that helped more than 11,000 women get safe, illegal abortions before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on Roe v. Wade in January 1973. KVU listeners might know Judith from her monthly poetry show, Poetry and Everything, which airs the fourth Monday of the month at 10 p.m. Judith Arcana, thanks very much for joining us at KVU today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
As mentioned in the introduction, you were a Jane in Chicago, and that was an organization of volunteers who helped women get safe, those still illegal abortions, because it was illegal before Roe versus Wade in Illinois. How'd you get involved with that organization?
Well, sort of classic again, not classic like poetry, but classic like ordinary. In the summer of 1970, I thought that I was pregnant, and that would have been an unfortunate time to make a person. It would have been very bad for that little person, and it wouldn't have been too good for me either. So I did what really almost everyone did, despite the fact that it was illegal, and asked around, called a friend who was a medical student, actually, at the University of Illinois Medical School's campus in Chicago, where we both lived, my friend and I. And he said, I thought maybe he already knew how to do it and he would just help me, you know. And he said, I don't know, but I'll get right back to you. And bless his heart and mind, he did. I doubt if it was 24 hours. And this is what he said, which I have now sort of burned into my brain. So, okay, so here's my friend. He's a medical student at the university. He calls me back and he says, everybody here says, call this number and ask for Jane. Isn't that incredible? And when he says everybody, he means the medical students, the teachers. He asked around. It was like what you would call an open secret, which often is the case when something is against the law, but a lot of people do it or want it or have it. Some things very bad, others very good, like access to healthy, clean, supportive abortion care. So that was how I heard about them. As it happened, I was lucky that summer and did not, in fact, need an abortion. But by the time I found that out, I had called Jane and had this wonderful long conversation with a woman whose name, of course, was not really Jane, but I didn't know that at first. And then when I called her back to say, oh, I'm in luck, don't need one, we had another wonderful, long, serious political conversation. This woman was a total stranger to me. And we had these two extraordinary conversations. And at the end of the second one, she said, we're taking in some new counselors in the fall. It sounds like you might be someone who might be interested. And I had never given it a moment's thought prior to that summer. And sure enough, I went to this little, she gave me all the information, little orientation meeting in a small church right at the end of my street. I literally walked two blocks from my apartment into this wonderful little church and met this group of women. And I thought, whoa, this is good work. You know how it is when you find good work in the world.
Oh, yes.
And so I signed up.
For listeners, if they want to find out more, actually, you wrote a story called Keisha and Joni and Jane, and that's kind of a speculative fiction, right, about a future time and a near future time.
Very near, unfortunately.
Hard to envision that now, where abortions are illegal again.
Right.
It's published in a zine, and the cover features your actual mugshot.
Yes.
So you were arrested in Chicago around 1972. What's the story behind that?
Well, even though the service was, as I said, an open secret, and certainly the police, you know, the police always know about pretty much everything that's going on, and they do what they want, and they don't do what they don't want. And we know that sometimes they, like the professors at the University of Illinois Medical School, would send people to us, and they never wanted to bother us. But in the lead up to the Roe case, which everyone in the nation who was paying any attention knew was coming to the court and would in early 73 be dealt with, by the spring of 72, there were people who were encouraging the Chicago police, or this is speculative, we don't have facts. Mm-hmm. When I say we, I mean the Janes. But this is the theory that we've worked with, talking to folks who were in law and politics at the time and in the city. And so the notion is that they wanted to make abortion work look bad. And so cops who were not, as we called them, our cops, which is to say not the neighborhoods where we actually worked, but another neighborhood in the city, busted the service. And on the day that they busted the service, seven women were working, which was pretty much always the case. And on that day, I was one of those seven, hence the mugshot. We were ransomed out. People immediately set to raising money, other Janes, friends of the service, and so on, so that we all were able to make bail. And the picture is on the cover because my publisher, who is actually here in Portland, Charles Overbeck of Eberhard Press, when he was he published that zine that you're talking about, Keisha and Joni and Jane, Charles said, well, what have you got? Let me see what you've got in the file. We'll figure it out. And when he spotted the mugshot, he said, oh, this is definitely it. And I said, seriously? Are you kidding? Because it never would, again, I'm making myself sound a little like a dolt here, but it just never would have entered my mind. And the truth is, not only was Charles right in terms of the terrific design that he created, you know, the parody of a playbill, which he calls the Jane Bill, but using that picture, it is an incredible draw. I've had college students and, well, actually people of all ages say to me, oh, what's this? At conferences and meetings and so on. People love that cover. And they're not being sarcastic about it. They are seriously drawn to the notion that here's this young woman. I was 27 years old, and she was arrested for doing this thing which should be medical practice, but when abortion is illegal, abortion is not medicine, it's felony homicide. People don't think about it that way, but we had to.
And then, of course, you got off.
We did get off. Well, our lawyer, smart, another smarty woman like ourselves, if I do say so myself, and I do, another smarty pants woman, our lawyer stalled and stalled and stalled. And then in January of 73.
Roe versus Wade.
Exactly. And so the case was dropped. And we had our files expunged, which I always think of as kind of a joke. It's hard for me to believe that the Chicago police actually got rid of any records.
They probably lost it.
Oh, well, that is a good guess. That is a good guess.
But I always believe in incompetence over malevolence.
My God, I love that. That's a great bumper sticker.
Oh, Judith, I wanted to get to the book, the new book.
The book, yes.
Yes. That's the focus of
the reason we're doing this show.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the reasons. But Announcements from the Planetarium, it's the title also of one of the poems included in the book. Why did you choose this title for the entire work?
Well, a couple reasons. One is it's a cool title. You know, when you're choosing to name things. Of course, writers, we are always choosing titles. Once you do the thing, then you've got to name the thing. And I thought Announcements from the Planetarium was a great line, and it could work as a title. And also, it's not just a title of a poem. It's a title from one of the, there's a couple series in the book, and one of the series is a series of what I call mixtapes. I think of myself as the DJ for these poems as opposed to the poet slash writer in the usual sense. And I liked the idea of using one of these weird little pieces, a mixtape, and calling attention to it by having it be the title poem. Also, the announcement that poem is making is relevant to at least one of the few, I say there's a few major themes that run through the poems in this collection. The rationale for putting them together was that they had these relationships, and one of them is reflected in this poem, Announcements from the Planetarium.
Would you like to read that?
Sure, I will read that. Astronomers can see the glow, infrared radiation from dust warmed by all the stars burning since everything ever. For right now, though, just give me one thing I can hold on to believe in this living is a hard way to go. Oh, you should keep on, no matter how difficult. Unless it kills you, then you know you've gone too far. And what I do with each of the mixtapes at the end of the poem is, in italics, a list that says, including words from, and in this case there are three people, Kim A. MacDonald, a scientist, John Prine, and Alice Neal, the artist.
Oh, and I also wanted to mention at the reading, you started off your part of it. You had your publisher speak too, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And you started off with two poems that you read, but they weren't your own poems. They were by other writers, but they were both about childhood and youth, which I found very fitting, since the book, I think, is a meditation on memory, wisdom, mortality, takes us from youth to old age.
Yes.
And some autobiographical material in there, too. There's one piece in the book, maybe more prose than poem, which is somewhat of a brief synopsis of your life, and I wondered if you could read that for us. It's called After a Long Life, the Short Version.
I'd love to read it, but I have to admit, and I don't know if I said this at the reading last night or not, it really isn't my life. It's rooted in my life. It's rooted in my life in the sense that everything I write is rooted in my life, but I made up a lot of this stuff.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Well, because we don't know each other that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, it's a reader's kind of false assumption about authors in
general.
Well,
especially poetry, I think.
Yes.
People believe that poetry is never fiction, but I believe that everything that we write is fiction in the sense that you can't make your life into art. You can use your life when you make art with words or with marble or with paint or with dance or whatever, but it's not your life. And the farther away you get, the more it is what I'm calling fiction. This one's pretty far.
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. On today's show, we're talking with Judith Arcana, author of the new book of poems, Announcements from the Planetarium, published by Oregon's own Flowstone Press.
Okay, do you still want me to read it?
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay. After a long life, the short version. Let me tell you about my childhood, how it was spent reading Shakespeare as soon as I could slide a chubby finger across the page of a faux folio, smudging the cheap ink. Then I'll tell you about my adolescence, the time I refused to speak for 19 days, and a counselor told my mother's new husband I should be sent away with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, or maybe it was Rosenberg and Greenglass. Then I'll tell you about my years on the stage, my time as a traveling player, those hot months of summer stock in the southern states, where the only respite, rare and thrilling, was exiting the striped tent in the mowed field to sudden rain with hail the size of olives, cherries, plum tomatoes. Later, I can talk about the marriages, the children, the group therapy, the 12-step meetings, and my days in the Safeway parking lot, collecting carts because I needed a job that didn't require thinking. The pirate ship, the paper bag factory in Copenhagen, the loading dock in East Timor, each promised but did not deliver a do-not-think situation. Finally, wandering the North American West, crossing and recrossing rivers too fast and cold to soothe me, I won a door prize at a Friday night square dance at the Elks Hall in Boise. 10 days, free, at a health club. Well, I wanted health, so I went. Now all I want is the hot tub. Want only to be submerged, to walk naked down white tile steps into nearly boiling water, to sit on the underwater ledge while fierce streams push hard against my spine. I don't care about the free weights, though I'm glad they've been liberated. I don't want to spin, except maybe straw into gold. I won't use the track, the tennis court, the machines. I want only that ritual bath, the cool shiver after, the shiny hair dryers, the little bowl of Q-tips next to the stack of towels, the mirrored wall that tells me who I am.
Oh, thank you. I still love it, even though it.
I'm glad.
I realize now it's not
I'm glad.
Autobiographical.
Yeah. Yeah. When you get all those details, you think, no, wait a minute. She couldn't have done all that. Nobody's done all that. Although, I tell you, there are a few things here. Like, for instance, it is the dream of my life to have a money job that requires no thinking because I think too much. I think way too much. And I just want to have headspace, literally space, open space in my head, but I can't get it. I just can't get it. Anyway, that's an example of how it came from my life, but I just made up all this other stuff, which I love too.
Right.
I'm glad you agree.
Now, aside from the autobiographical details or the lack of them,
right.
the fiction, I describe the book as a meditation on memory, wisdom, and mortality. There's one poem in the book that treats wisdom as almost a consolation prize for growing old, and it's called A Different Thing. I wonder if you could read that for us.
Yes, yes. Oh, I like the way you talk about it. I appreciate very much the way you're thinking about this stuff because it's what I want from my readers. You know, very well, we don't always get from our audiences what we have in mind, but what we get is something we need to think about.
Or sometimes you don't know what you're getting.
Oh, for sure. Well, in radio, we don't know what they're thinking
home.
Out there.
Yeah, and if you're on late at night, you know, even 10 o'clock, you don't really know who's listening.
Exactly.
I know there are people out there.
They're out there. We know they're out there. Yeah. And thank you for it, folks. Okay, this poem is called A Different Thing. I'm not saying I'm done collecting knowledge. I won't stop picking up shiny bits of information. I'm saying wisdom is a different thing. It's not about collection, accumulation. Maybe it's like sorting, arranging, mixing, and then steeping. It's like making tea, letting it steep, letting it sit a while, sometimes tasting it, learning what it is after you wait through the time it's been steeping. Fact is, everybody's wise sometimes, babies even, high school sophomores, 37-year-old bank managers. But as the main thing, the main way of the mind, the way that comes later, wisdom is, or means, something else. Something babies, high school sophomores, and 37-year-old bank managers don't do, have, or use. You can be old and not be wise, but you can't be wise if you're not this old. Not this much, this long, this often, not as a habit. The gift comes late, perhaps as compensation.
Which leads to my more obvious question, probably. As you grow older, do you see yourself growing wiser?
I actually, and this poem came out of that, for a while I thought it was presumptuous to assume that I was becoming wise as opposed to just accumulating information, because it keeps coming at you. You stay alive, it just keeps coming.
It comes in, it goes out.
Yes, exactly. So I feared being presumptuous, did not want to indulge in what I thought might be vain. But once I was past 70, I thought, you know, you really are thinking differently. You're doing, this is me talking to myself, you're doing different things with the collected information. If you're paying attention, I've come to think, feel, consider, you can almost not avoid it, really. You have all of this experience. You not only know stuff, but you've known how to put it together and work with it and make it into other stuff. And that's a kind of raw description of wisdom. But yeah, I'm now letting myself think that about myself.
We earlier talked about the mixtapes in the book, and you did this last night too, but you said the same thing here. You saw yourself more as a DJ here in gathering this material and putting it together rather than a poet. And there's a number of references to musicians and songwriters in the book. Paul Simon, John Prine, Bob Dylan, the Beatles. In fact, the epigraph for the book is from a John Fogerty song.
Yes.
Rock and Roll Girls. And it's "Sometimes I Think Life Is Just a Rodeo. The trick is to ride and make it to the bell." So I was wondering, do you find that choosing and arranging the poems in a collection like this is kind of like a songwriter choosing songs and arrangements for an album?
For an album? Oh, I'm sure. I don't know that I've thought of that particular analogy, but the minute you say it, I think, well, gotta be. The process of putting the stuff together has become, and this is true with prose as well, chapters even, has become one of the cool things I love about being a writer. It's not just a task assigned, now you have to put them together. The whole idea of making a book, like making an album, is creating a new thing. I'm taking these pieces. It's like quilting. Here's a piece that was part of an apron. Here's a piece that was part of my husband's work shirt. Here's a piece, all of this. And I'm going to put them together, and I'm going to make something else that is not the work shirt, not the apron, not at all. It's this new thing made of these pieces, which, as a matter of fact, I also made. That's not necessarily true of DJs, but it is definitely true of musicians who are creating an album, which is why I like that analogy. They make the individual songs, like I make the individual sections or poems or chapters, and then they figure out how to put it together. And of course, I mean, right now people are, celebrating some big anniversary of Beatles.
Oh, Sgt. Pepper.
Of Sgt. Yeah, Pepper.
Out in 1967.
Yes. Okay, right. Yes, years. There we go. Yeah. 50 years. And I remember very well, Sgt. Pepper was a phenom. What a phenomenon. It was a story. It was, they were all together.
Considered the first concept album.
Exactly.
Though I guess that's arguable among
For sure. And people are arguing about it as we speak.
Right.
All over the world. Nevertheless, it was notable. And it serves exactly what you're talking about, I think. I mean, serves as an example of what you're talking about. Those guys, they wrote a lot of songs. Some of them I'm sure we've never heard and never will, because not even geniuses make greatness all the time. Read some Dylan lyrics and give yourself some evidence for that.
There's a lot of work, I think, that goes into those songs. We tend to think that they just come easily to the
great
musicians
no way.
And songwriters.
No
yeah.
way. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Each piece. And then this thing you're talking about and you're asking me about, the putting them together to create an album or a collection, in this case, a book, a chapbook, it's a whole nother job. And it's a great job. This is not a complaint. I love it. But it took me some years to realize, whoa, this is very much like the actual writing process. Mm-hmm. This is also using my creative spirit and my intellect in a way that I wouldn't if I were, washing the dishes or something.
Oh, Judith, one last request. One of my favorite poems in the book is towards the end, so it might be a good way to go out. This one is called "You Never Think It's Not What You Want."
Oh, I wrote this poem, actually. This was a command performance from the cartoonist Nicole Hollander, who created Sylvia and other bits of genius. And Nicole at the time was doing a blog, and she was doing stuff about holidays. This was a few years ago. And she said, "I need a poem." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "I need a poem, like soon." I said, "Well, how soon?" She said, "End of the week." This was like a Tuesday. I said, "We don't usually do it that way." She said, come on. So, and that's why it says here, "For Nicole," at the end of the poem. Uh-huh. Anyway, all right. So, yes, I'm happy to read this. "You never think it's not what you want. We know it's wise to chew our food slowly, though long ago in the wild, and also now at the drive-thru, this hasn't always been possible. So much that's wise seems so often not possible. Long ago and far away, early in the species, chewing slowly was a luxury or something for herbivores, the cud groups, not our zippy primate team of cousins. Chewing slowly could be dangerous. On holidays, though, a slow chew might save you from predators across the table, long-toothed in-laws, former lovers, crazy neighbors, your own grown children, the typical assortment in December. That month of longest night and shortest light has way too many holidays. Food is featured every time, served at tables, handed round on small trays, displayed for grazing guests who say yes, yes. December food is like toys, like gift wrap, like decoration, admired for its design, shining in the glitter of sparkling lights that dramatize the clever art of its frosting, its stuffing or shape, unnatural. So well prepared is all that food, so generously portioned and carefully contrived for delight, you never think it's not what you want, won't be what you can use, won't be what you need after the ball. When the party's over, the new year rung in, you really did get there with bells on. Your calendar looks just like last year. The months named January and so on. The weeks, again, all start with Monday, Tuesday. You dared to hope for something. You had some expectations. You made plans. You even thought the earth was your model, turning toward the light. But you forgot it never stops. All of forever just keeps on turning.
Oh, I love that last line.
Oh, great.
Comforting great. And frightening at the
yes,
same time.
Yes, at the same time, because everything is so complicated.
Well, Judith Arcana, thanks very much for coming into KABU.
It's great. It's a pleasure.
We've been talking with Judith Arcana, author of the new book of poems, Announcements from the Planetarium, published by Oregon's own Flowstone Press. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KABU Community Radio. Many thanks to Judith for visiting us at KABU and to all of you for listening.
Sincerely wasting away. Give me your answer. Fill in a form. Mine forevermore. Or will you still need me? Will you still feed me?